All right. Good morning, and for Jacques, who's in Bhutan, I think it's a good evening or good night. But thank you for joining this week's W3CCCG weekly meeting. So this week we are very honored and have Jacques and Drummond here to present on self-sovereign identity in Bhutan, and we'll go over that main agenda later. But before then, I just wanted to do some quick code of ethic and professional conduct reminder. More or less, just make sure that we are respectful to each other and acknowledge each other's opinions. I think we've been doing that pretty well for the last year or two that I'm here. So, but just want to do that quick reminder at the very, very start. A quick IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Make sure you have a W3C account and sign the community contributor license agreement. If you have any questions at any time, just reach out to any of the co-chairs. Quick call notes. These meetings are being recorded and auto transcribed by the transcription service. We will publish these meeting minutes within 2 to 3 days after this meeting concludes. We use GT chat to queue speakers during the call. So you can type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue or Q- to remove it. At any point in time, you can just do Q question to see who's in the queue. All right. Any introductions or reintroductions? If you're new to the community, or if you haven't been active and are rejoining, please feel free to unmute and introduce yourself. Don't be shy. Okay, I think we can leave the last 5 minutes, just in case other people scroll in, they want to introduce or reintroduce themselves at the end of the meeting. All right, any announcements or reminders? Hi, Kalia.
Hi. Two things. One, since I announced it here, I wanted to share the results from the APAC Digital Identity Unconference. You can see a picture of all the beautiful people who came and a book of proceedings if you want to go through that. And in Europe, in June 7 to 9 in Zurich is the Digital Identity Unconference Europe. We have a lot of great folks coming. We now have a potential topics page up so you can see the sort of things folks are going to talk about. So if you have any colleagues in Europe, please let them know about it, and I think it's going to be great.
Thank you, Kalia. Any other announcements or reminders? Okay. Any updates on the work items? All right. So let's get to the main agenda. So I shared earlier, today we're very glad to have Jacques to present on self-sovereign identity in Bhutan. So actually, Kalia sent out an email, and we have a discussion in the CCG email list in regards to Bhutan adopting self-sovereign identity a couple months ago. And we're very, very glad to have Jacques here. He's the CTO of Jacques Holdings and also the chairman of the board at Timbu Tech Park. And, he is instrumental in actually convincing the Bhutanese government to adopt self-sovereign identity technology. So we're very glad that he's here. They will share the insights on the challenges and opportunities of SSI and its potential to actually empower kind of individuals' sovereignty of their identity in Bhutan. So, but Jacques and Drummond, please take the floor.
Thanks, Harrison. I prepared a couple of slides just to sort of guide us through the process. I'm just going to figure out how to get them to come up. That looks like a present. Oh, my screen is still saying the conference hasn't started, so I wonder if that's what's stopping me from actually accessing the...
Are you using Chrome or...?
I am using Chrome. That's okay. I managed to get it to disappear. Okay, let me just share a screen. Let me know.
Can see it.
Awesome.
Yeah, perfect.
So I'm very happy to also share the stage with Drummond. So I've known Drummond for a little bit over a year since he's been helping and working on the project. So I'm going to mention Drummond a few times during the presentation today because he's been instrumental to our project as well. And then I've seen some other people on the screen as they loaded in that I obviously know as well. So Kalia being one of them. I was at the UN-conference in APAC. What a wonderful event. And I'm going to the one in Zurich in May. So, sorry, in June. So, you know, if any of you turn up there, please, let's have a chat and have a coffee and catch up. So there's only five slides, and there's a couple of short videos to actually just show you how the product worked as part of the journey. So most of what you see today is actually out of what we call a communications pack that we use for what we call director level and higher. So the ministry secretaries, the ministry limpos, which are the actual ministers, the way we know them in other countries, and then also the Prime Minister and His Majesty and some, all the very senior people. At any point, if you want to ask any questions and stuff, please just shout at me or point something in my direction. I can only see my screen that I'm sharing, so I won't see if you put up a hand or come in the queue. Just please speak up. So the agenda is very simple. A couple of things about the journey so far. So we've been on this journey just over a year. Some of the top challenges that we've had getting to where we are today. And then, you know, specifically a little bit about the journey with our government and then some ideas on how we think we can make the or how the implementation could be made easier. So what are the things that have been stopping us or slowing us down? So what does the journey look like so far? We started with the book, which is Drummond's book. He co-wrote it with Alex. And we read a couple of articles and stuff on self-sovereign identity, and I met Dashu Gilley. So Dashu is sort of a title the same as you would see a lord or a very high-ranking official in other royal families or aristocracies. Dashu Gilley, I met him in Singapore, and we talked about this particular project that they had, which they were still going to run on PKI, a normal PKI. And I had read an article about SSI, and I said, hey, this sounds like a good idea. Should we try this? And he liked it. And so that kind of got the ball rolling. And about a month later, they offered me a job. And about 2 months later, I rocked up with my wife in Bhutan, and that's how the journey started. And so we were then introduced by what was then which was the owners of Verity Platform. And they had many different names, which Drummond, of course, worked for. We got introduced to Drummond and the book, and we read the book, and we really liked the book a lot. So the book became our Bible. And a lot of what we do in the project actually comes out of the book. And so we often refer it to as our SSI Bible. And so from there, we built what we call our product vision canvas for the national digital identity, which is then based on self-sovereign identity and had two very key principles. Security above everything and privacy equal to security. So we wanted to make sure that all the security is there to protect people's data, but that it's also from a privacy point of view and that people can have therefore own and control their data in that way. And because Bhutan is such a small nation, we're only about 750,000 people. We have to think globally. You know, there is no real scale to actually make this platform scale to the point where we can sell it to other nations. So His Majesty, when we presented the project to him for his final approvals, said he likes the KPIs and he likes the unique value proposition and all these things, but and the particular indicators, so the goals and the metrics and stuff that for success. And he said, I only want one metric to be the success criteria for this project. And that is that you have to earn at least $1 million with it outside of Bhutan. So he made us from day one actually think very global about how we went about this project and to make sure that we can actually share what we've learned and then potentially also sell off the components or actually sell and run identity on behalf of other countries for them. So that's how we went. And then from the vision, we went to a NDI roadmap. And by the way, if you want any of the things which I show on the screens, except, of course, Drummond's book, you have to pay for that one. But everything else I'm happy to share, and I'll send you copies of those. In the project roadmap, what you see in the thumbnail is a lot of swim lanes and then also a lot of other sort of arrows on the top. Each of the arrows on the top actually represents either a POC that we did or a pilot that we did. And the right-hand-most one is the one that we actually, when we launch, which is later, or fully nationally launch, which is later this year. We've already done one launch, and I'll show you what was in the first launch versus what was in the second launch and why we have to. But what I wanted to show you in that particular one is the top blue line that you see in the swim lane is the technical line, is the line that everybody is accustomed to. Hey, you have to build some technology for this to work. All of the swim lines below are non-technical. So they're communications, they're education, they're how to make sure that we include everybody, whether they're educated, whether they have access to the internet, whether they have access to smartphones, and to make sure that we don't harm anybody, but we include everybody in the same way. So, you know, and we spend a lot of time communicating. We have about 221 or 22 stakeholders. It goes up a little bit and down a little bit every now and again. And we communicate with them every single month of this project and sometimes more than once a month. And we either meet them face-to-face or we send them an email update or we send them a newsletter, something to that effect, just to tell them what we've achieved, what we're doing in the next month, or to invite them to see actually what a new POC looks like. And we do rotate the people that we invite, and we try and have a POC every month, but not a gap more than 2 months between each POC that we physically show them something. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to show you a couple of very short videos. The first one is 2 minutes long. It actually just shows you how we do the onboarding into the app, into the digital wallet, using the biometrics and the data from the government. And then the next one is just some of the verifiable credentials that we issue. How do we do single sign-on with it? And then the last one is a decentralized chat app. One of the requirements that they've asked us is that we should have something that is an identity platform, which we then interpret as a digital wallet that has verifiable credentials. So we expanded that a little bit. They wanted something that can sign contracts digitally. So we have a digital signature app or digital signature capability as part of the app. And then we have a decentralized chat app because they want something that the government can trust, and they don't trust WhatsApp and WeChat and those sort of platforms. And then the fourth thing that they wanted is they wanted to be able to do digital payments. So we have a working version of the digital wallet for payments, but we haven't integrated it with this version of the wallet that we're showing you today. So the onboarding one is about 2 minutes long. You can probably not see it because I think it's still sharing it's still sharing my one screen, right? Let me just quickly switch and do a whole screen because then I can switch between them. Can you still see the video now?
Yes, we can.
Awesome.
There's no sound though, right?
It's actually just music playing in the background from the videos. I can talk you through it. Basically, all we've used two sets of data. The first set of data that you're typing in is data that we go and collect from your government record. And if we find anything that's in there as being accurate, we'll then ask you to do facial recognition. So we do a liveness test, facial recognition, in a second. And then we take the biometric facial recognition part with the data, and we confirm that with the biometric database.
Jock, sorry. Jock, we can't really hear you and watch the video at the same time. So maybe we can play the video first, and then you can comment on it. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Breaking all rules. If you could put a link to this deck someplace, that'd be great.
So hopefully you can hear me again. I'll post a link to the deck that has the links to the videos in and make sure that they're publicly available. I think we've published them on our YouTube channel, so I'll make sure that I'll share the links with you. So what you saw in the video was a person typing in a bunch of information, which we use to retrieve your records from the government. DCRC is our government that looks after birth and registrations and citizenship and stuff like that. And then if we do retrieve a record, a single record from the database, meaning there's enough data in there that is uniquely identifying you, we then go through the facial recognition part. So everybody in Bhutan has had their fingerprints taken, their facial pictures taken. Some have retina scans, some have palm vein scans, and some have finger vein scans, because we tried a lot of different types of biometrics to see how they work, what the performance is like, and things like that. And then once the person's face was recognized as a liveness test, we went into the sort of home screen of the app, and then you saw messages appear at the bottom that said we created a relationship with DCRC. So that's a peer-to-peer unique relationship with DCRC between that wallet and DCRC. And then it took that data and the biometrics and created a foundational identity, which was that VC that you saw then that was issued called the foundational identity. And then all the rest of it was just showing how you could favorite. So it turns up as in the favorite spot in your app and things like that. So that was all that one was about. The next one is just using the same wallet, scanning a QR code, and then it telling you that, hey, you work for DHI, which is the same company I happen to work with. So it's just a way for us to show people how we can prove that you work and why that's important. This one's about a minute long. So what you saw in that video is just an example of how we created the employee verifiable credential. And then because we have that in our wallet, we could then use that to sign into some of the DHI systems. So we happen to sign into the e-recruitment system to see whether there are more bots. So what we'll do is in the next one that we show you where we do the log on, there is actually two paths. So the first part of the video that you'll see is where somebody for the first time uses the single sign-on. So they kind of register in the background, and then you'll see the difference in the use case or the flow when they actually do the single sign-on the second time onwards. So the last one, so what you basically saw there is somebody registering and then the second time just logging in. So it asks you for a PIN and then it automatically signs you in. So the last one is just the chat app. And this one is just to show you that it's, it works well instead of WhatsApp. Not a very exciting demo for that part, but it works really well. And so the part that you didn't see there is that they can obviously do group messages. And they can also, the part that you didn't see is that you have to have a relationship with that person before you can actually invite them to a chat. So there isn't a, you don't have the functionality to search for a user for them to be able to, for you to jump onto the into the chat, but we'll show that later. So that's the journey up to now, where we are, and we did have a launch in February. So the functionality that I showed you in the different things was some of the use cases that was available, and we deliberately made His Majesty the Crown Prince the first digital citizen of Bhutan. It was on request of his father, the king. And on the 21st of February was a very special occasion because it was his father's birthday. And it was also a very auspicious day for the Buddhist religion. So those things, plus it was the prince's seventh birthday a week earlier, all those things came together, and they really wanted to, you know, for us to launch the identity on the on that day. So the first thing the media asked as well, so what? You know, what is the prince going to do with it? And the key part there is the actual chat app. So between the royal family, they use that chat app, and his tutor used that app. And so they feel quite a lot more safe using that chat app, because there were some of the royal family's WhatsApp chats that were broken into or stolen a couple of years ago. And because this is a decentralized app and it's a peer-to-peer relationship type app, it's very hard for people to actually break into that conversations that they have on that app. So that's why it was important for His Majesty to launch it on that day. And the next launch isn't chasing a particular calendar date. We created a set of use cases that we believe will help us with adoption. And we will launch the moment that we reach all of those use cases. And so the general time frame is the end of Q2, so around the end of June. But it's not a fixed a fixed date in the calendar. So that's kind of where we are today. So let's have a quick look at, so what were the key challenges to implementing and getting to where we are? The first one was just knowledge. It was so hard to get people with SSI type experience and understanding not just the technology, because the technology part is not that hard to get right. It's making sure that we, you know, don't harm people by the way that we do things, that we don't, as technologists, take shortcuts to implement and get something to work, and we break the SSI principles. There's not many of them in any case, but it's very easy to make a technical decision to make the system work easier, which would compromise the principles. And because security and privacy is so important, the other principles with it, that the SSI principles are very important to us as well. So we always trade off technology against the principles, and the principles always win. So whenever we have an architecture log, and there's a lot of trade-offs that we already had to do, where we override a technical decision based on because we potentially might break one of the SSI principles. But yeah, just getting people with that right level of experience, because it's such a new technology and stuff, was really, really hard. So we spend a lot of time training people on the philosophy of SSI and how to then implement that in code so that we don't break the principles. The next one is regulation. We do have quite a bit of very old regulation in Bhutan. One which is very common in other countries, which says, you know, personal identifiable information is not allowed to leave the physical borders of Bhutan. And we deliberately made the decision to have an edge wallet so you can carry it on your phone. And therefore it's always with you. And, you know, some of the things we're going to put in there is your educational credentials and also a digital passport. So, you know, we're talking to each of our One Hop airline partners or people who live around us. So India, Singapore, Nepal, Bangladesh. About potentially in the next 4 to 5 years, instead of using the traditional passport that we have, try to use an SSI passport. And so those are interesting conversations that are taking place at the moment. But to overcome the regulation that we have, which we call BIGMA 2018, we wrote our own act, and hence Drummond stepping into the fold. And Drummond actually helped us write most of the bill while he was still working for us, and a big chunk of the governance framework which sits behind the act. Currently it's a bill because we're waiting for Parliament to enact it, and we're hoping that they're going to do it in this May-June sitting. The reason it wasn't done last year, November, is for some reason we forgot to understand that it has to be translated into Dzonga, which is the local official language for government and police. Otherwise, it cannot go from a bill to an act. And so the second problem that we had was there wasn't enough technical words and phrases to translate the act into Dzongkha properly without losing some of the information. So we had to actually go back to the language professors and people and say, hey, and explain to them some of the words and the intricacies of the technologies and stuff that we want to put in the act so that they could create words and phrases that we could translate to into Dzongkha and not lose the intent of what we are putting in the act. And it took us, we've been working on that now for the best part of 13 months, 12 to 13 months. And we're at the stage where we hopefully, you know, getting ready for them to put it and make it an act. The next one was just communications, and it's really, really hard to actually take a lot of people on a journey with you. And so we do have a constitutional monarchy, which means His Majesty the King is still the head of the government, but at the ministerial level and going down the ministerial path, so the secretaries and the directors, they will listen to His Majesty and they will try and be as polite as they can, but they don't always do exactly what he says in the time frame that he wants. So we made a conscious decision to spend a lot of time and effort on communications and to take these people on a journey with us. And it did actually go quite slow and stuff up until the launch with His Majesty Gelsi, the prince. Because at that point, we gave all of the ministers Drummond's book. And we also made Drummond sign the book so that it's, you know, unique to each one of the ministers, which they, you know, really, really appreciated. And now every time we meet them, the book is in display. So we can all see that the book is there. And I'll show you the communications pack. So we now also have a communications pack that all of the ministers, including the prime minister, carry with them. And when they have conversations across the world, they actually talk about NDI and they actually talk to people using the deck we've given them. And they reference Drummond's book and they talk, you know, comprehensively and well about SSI, which I think after a year talking to them almost every month was a big achievement for us. But do not underestimate the amount of time and effort it takes to communicate and take the government with us on that journey, even with the sort of top-down push from His Majesty. The next one is trust. There is a huge digital transformation happening in Bhutan at both public and private sectors. And there is a lot of distrust at the moment for anybody that is foreign, especially if you're Singaporean. And even I'm classed as Singaporean, although I'm Australian, because I lived in Singapore just before I moved here. And the reason for that is they see all this really fast change happening to a digital economy. And they don't necessarily always trust it. So we do spend quite a bit of time, you know, inviting people to discussion forums. We have hackathons where we deliberately say that you have to come up with solutions using the NDI. We had a whole day training workshops for all of the IT companies in Bhutan where that we invited them and we fed them for a whole day and gave them drinks and then showed them and taught them how to actually do single sign-on with NDI. So we have a lot of these in events to try and make sure that there is a higher level of trust that's starting to create. And people trust not only the technology, but the people who work in the technology. And so we do in Bhutan try to face most of the media and so sort of those sort of people with a lot more Bhutanese on the panels and a lot more Bhutanese faces in the paper. So they don't seem mind too much. And then I tend to do most of the international conversations. And then the last one is just gifted and talented people. We really struggle to get good technical people. There are a lot of good technical people around, but Bhutan at the moment is going through a brain drain. We are losing roughly just over 1,000 people per month leaving Bhutan, the technical, really well-qualified people going to Australia, some going to Canada, some going to Kuwait. And so keeping talented people is very hard because the moment we also started talking about our capability in our team, a lot of the people in my teams have had offers from people trying to poach them. Which isn't great, but we were expecting that. So we did spend a lot of time on talent acquisition and retention and that sort of stuff. But it's really hard to get talented people who are not just pure technologists, but who also understand the principles of SSI and inherently want to do the right thing. That's very hard to get those three things in one person, because it's really important that they want to do the right thing, understand the principles, and then code it. It's almost like the technical part is the last part that we look at. And so it's really difficult. So a little bit more about our journey with the government. Some of you might have seen that picture in Forbes a couple of weeks ago. That is the because we call the Dragon Kingdom. That's the Bhutan flag with the dragon. And he normally just holds coins, but those happen to be Bitcoins. So there was a lot of stuff in the paper recently about us mining Bitcoin and having mined Bitcoin for some time. There's a lot of people that feel it's not right that our government can do these sort of projects, including the national digital identity, which is for the people of Bhutan quite foreign, and them not talking to the people about it. So there are generally two transformations that happen, some transformations and technology projects that we can openly discuss and talk about. And the government shares it with the people because they feel that they would understand why we are doing it. It's not that hard to explain the benefit of it. Just like Bitcoin mining, NDI is quite difficult for people to understand until you show them the real benefit. It's one thing to say to a farmer that's living in Gelapu, hey, you know what? It's not going to take you 2 days to come to a government office to pay $2 of license fee and then another 2 days for you to travel back to your house. You can now do it in your bedroom. They understand the words, but they don't really understand the concept, and they don't really believe it, because about 3 years ago, there was a project where they did actually do a lot of e-services. But what happened somewhere in between, there was a mismatch, and the e-services, some e-services still require you to take paperwork to a physical office. So they didn't really see the benefit. And so they do just mistrust that a little bit. And so that same mistrust that's in the people also sit at the very high level, at the secretary of the government level, at the different departments and the ministers. So we spend a lot of time, like I said before, taking them on that journey and making sure that they really understand that, you know, what's that second level of benefit? Yes, I can have an ID. Yes, I can have a credential that I work in a place. I can single sign on so I don't have to remember user ID password. But, you know, it's not really that big a benefit. So one of the examples that we are showing the government now is the deep integration that we're doing with some of the banking systems. So the bank that we own, which is called Bank of Bhutan, we are doing a bank opening part in the app, which the wallet will sign, will, you know, put all your data into the forms, and it'll take about 5 seconds to open a bank account. Now, there's about 20 pages of paper you have to fill in. There's 2 stamps you have to put on. There's a lot of fingerprints and signing that happens. So it takes about a month to open a bank account. And so that's the real sort of benefit that we want to show them. And then we want to take some of the e-government services and redo the flow so that they can really see the wallet working in those services. So every Bhutanese, as an example, has to do a audit clearance and a security clearance every single year to maintain their job. And those are some of the very early services which we're integrating now as part of this adoption rollout that we're talking about. So that way we know that everybody will use the platform really, and they will see and feel the benefit with especially the security clearance, because they wouldn't have to take all their documents, get it signed, photocopied and stamped and printed and all that sort of stuff. The next one is actually the Royal Government of Bhutan, which is the icon you see there. We did spend a lot of time with them, convincing them that we should actually write an act. And I have the act open here so I can show you act. It's not a huge act, because we did try to actually learn specifically a lot of things from Canada. We're very close to Tim Boma and John Jordan from Canada, and we learn a lot from them around how they set up their standards. And so we're kind of learning from that around interoperability and not making the act too technical, and rather moving as much of those technical things to the governance framework as we can. But it does, the act does talk a lot about the specifically things about governance, interoperability, policies, the decentralized APIs, the digital credentials, wallets, digital agents, all these sort of things. And again, we've shared this act with many people. So, you know, if you want a copy of the act, you're more than welcome, and we'll share it after the meeting. The next one is BIGMA, which is the regulator. In Bhutan, the regulator almost has as much bite as the government or the laws do. As an example, I'll give you an example. We had a bank outage because of an internet problem for about 3 days, and people couldn't pay for their groceries and stuff, and they fined the bank almost $1 million. So, and they're very quick to do that. So they like to really scrutinize what you're doing. And because what we are doing with the national digital identity, by putting your data on your phone, which you could take outside of the physical borders of Bhutan, they are really sort of kind of waiting and saying, hey, don't make this wallet and things work with people leaving before you have the act fully signed and enacted by the government. So they are getting a little bit more friendly, but we have been working with them for months and months and months and months. So we're getting there. And the last one is just communications and communication. So I wanted to show you what the deck looks like. So this is the deck that the ministers use, including the prime minister. So you can see the icons at the bottom is GovTech Bhutan, which is the government technology agency. And then DHI is us. And then the icons that you see, obviously, is the national digital identity. I'm just going to flick very quickly through here. It's six slides. It's just so you can get a high level view of what we're doing. So it talks a little bit about the background. It talks about some of the security stuff, some of the transactions, and then the verifiable credentials and where it's stored, digital identity and proofs and that sort of stuff. Then we talk a lot about the philosophy, and this is probably something that we spend a lot of time for people to understand how this is different to what they used to, where DCRC has a big database with everybody's data in linked to their parents and grandparents and where they live and their phone numbers and how that's all going to change. Then we talk a little bit about the technologies, about DITS and cryptography and trust root management and that sort of stuff. The thing which we don't bring in here, we in the act actually put a part in that says, if you are an organization that wants to be part of this ecosystem, you have to have a current legal entity identifier. So that's the equivalent of a national digital identity, but for companies. And we make sure that both of those are in place so that we can use verifiable credentials for companies as well. So talks a little bit about the technology. Then we talk specifically about the benefits for individuals and organizations, how that's going to make their lives better. And then we talk a little bit about where we are in the different parts of the project. And that's basically it. So beyond this point, there is nothing much that we want to share that we think is really important. So we felt that if we leave something behind, then it'd be much easier for people to remember. So we created a foldable brochure, if you like. And the left-hand side is what you see on the back end, and it talks just a little bit what are the type of services that you get with a platform like this. And then the middle column is an example of the NDI in action. So it talks a little bit about a person that wants to have a job and wants to open a bank account and how that would work. And then on the right-hand side, we talk a lot about the different benefits that you could see from both organizational and custom. And so even the prime minister carries about 20 of these with him wherever he goes, and he loves to hand them out. So, and some of the ministers are in Japan at the moment, and they are doing the same thing, carrying this sort of stuff and handing it out. And I think it's because we spend such an amount of time with them talking about it that they are willing to do it. So what can be done to simplify implementation? And these topics might be a little bit controversial. So the first one is open source. I do understand, and as a project, we do understand that people want to make money out of this. But we feel that, yes, although everybody has to make money out of it, it shouldn't be something that becomes so expensive that, you know, it's just the Apples and the Googles and stuff that play in this field, because then we're going to miss the boat completely, because there'll be so many people that are left out that can't afford an Apple phone or a big Android phone and stuff like that. And so putting as much of this stuff in open source as we can so it becomes available to people, we feel is really important. Standards. Welcome to W3C. We love standards, and we try and use as many of the standards as we can. But it's very hard for us as technologists to understand which ones work best together. So Kalia is on the call, and we've asked Kalia and Kalia's organization to help us with that, to just make some more sense out of all of the standards, because it's not the greatest thing in the world for us to understand all those things. So could we have, you know, somewhere something that says, hey, if you put these five together, they work great. But if you add this one in, then maybe that one doesn't work too well with it. So, you know, something just to make the standards landscape a bit simpler. Then regulations and laws. Every country has regulations about their data. And most of those regulations specifically talk about sensitive information or identifiable information, which is the core of identity and SSI platform. So, you know, we are sharing our act, and we are going to share our governance framework as widely as we can so that people can adopt and reuse and cut and paste as much as they like, because we feel that, you know, people should learn from our experience having gone through that path. The next one is education. There's not really enough information about how do I train or create a great SSI-based technologist. What do they need to know? What are the technologies they need to understand? How do they need to make decisions about what is the right framework for the right application at the right time? How do we get them to understand that these things will probably change every year, and we're probably going to rewrite quite a bit of what we have every year? And because technologists, you know, every bit of code we write, we tend to make our baby. So we want to hold on to it too much. And then back to communications. I think forums like this tonight is fantastic. I think we should, you know, let people who have these projects and work on these projects share, you know, these are our scars. This is what we battled with. For us, the technology was never the hard thing. For us, the communications was, the regulation was, understanding which standards to adopt first, how to get from having nothing in place to having something that we can iterate on in place. And making sure that we talk about that, we talk to people. I mean, we've probably, you know, talked the ears of people like Drummond and Andy from Avast around, you know, because they work with other people in the world. So what do they do? We've talked to a lot of people like Daryl and Daryl O'Connell and people like that who have their own platforms. It's important because we feel that everybody should have an identity, and it shouldn't be something that is prohibited due to cost. We think it's really important that we should talk through these things. So that's me, and thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk and show you things. And please ask me questions or anything.
Cool. Yeah, we have about 3 to 5 minutes before Jock has to jump. So please do Q plus if you have any questions. So Ted, I think you're first in the queue.
Yeah, I think so. I'll ask both of my questions in once because we have limited time. First one is, how is this self-sovereign identity as opposed to Bhutan sovereign identity? Since you're verifying everything with Bhutan biometrics, I mean, I'm not fingerprinted in Bhutan's records, so I don't think I can get this. And it doesn't seem that anybody in Bhutan can get it without already being fingerprinted. So that's thing one. Thing two is, the question of multiple identities or personas, not about fraud per se, but imagine that I'm a member of two clubs and I don't want either one to know that I'm a member of the other. So I want to have essentially two identities. How does the system handle that? That's it.
Sure. So on the first one, we deliberately build it in such a way that everybody that comes in Bhutan will have a national digital identity. So I have one. We, instead of going to DCRC, we go to DOI, Department of Immigration. And you can remotely actually, when you apply for a visa to come to Bhutan, you basically take a picture of the, picture part of your passport, and we read the QR code or the MRZ code that's at the bottom, and we take the picture of that. And then we do a liveness test and stuff like that. And then once you're in the country, you can go through a more formal process where they will verify your details. But you can actually get a national digital identity remotely in that sense. But you would have to use a government-approved current photo identity, like either a recognized driver's license or a passport, preferably a passport.
Right. Yeah. So again, that's not self-sovereign. That's Bhutan or whatever other government sovereign. I don't see self-sovereignty here.
Yeah. So we deliberately, after we issue the foundational identity, there's a separation. So the government doesn't understand what my identity is post that point. So the agent which issues the foundational identity is using that data to verify that I am who I say I am based on the government data, and then issues that identity so that it can be trusted across borders. But from that point on, even the company that's going to run this is called the National Digital Identity Company. It's set up, and there are provisions in the act to separate it from the government and make sure that there is no linkages back to the government. So from that point on, it does become self-sovereign, and your wallet is always self-sovereign because there's no link back to the government. But we deliberately wanted it to start with something that can be trusted. So that's why it's issued. So it's not 100% pure SSI, but it's as close as what our neighbors would allow us and trust us with. Does that make sense?
I mean, it makes some sense, but it is not SSI at all, because the base point, the primary identity, is government-based. And bam, it's gone.
Well, the problem is trust, right? So your second
sure.
question is...
Do you trust me to be my own sovereign? Apparently not. I mean, that's fine. Just brand it properly. It's not SSI. No. And I'll stand
Sorry.
By that.
Yeah, in the interest of time, we have another question. So, Clea, you mind taking the floor?
I didn't mean to Q+, but I did ask a question earlier up in the thread while Jacques was talking, so I'll ask that, which is, have you shared your bill act with the UNCITRAL folks working on sort of model legislation at the UN level about digital identity?
No, but we would be happy to.
I'm going to link there up to that. So, and I can make an introduction if you want.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
All right, Jacques, I think you got to go. But we can have Ted or Drummond actually close the discussion. But I think you have a 10 o'clock, right? So,
Yeah.
But I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Jacques, for taking the time to actually present here and share your experiences with us. So thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thank you so much. And if All anybody right. have questions, you're more than welcome to send them to me on email or something.
Okay. And then I will ping you about sharing the deck, the link to the deck later. All right. Thank you. Thanks, sure. Jacques.
Thank you so much. Good night.
All right, Ted, you have the floor. Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to get an answer to my second question, which was the multiple identities.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well,
and as for people reacting to my high horse, you're right. I am very tall, and I will stay on the horse and be even taller, because accuracy and labeling is important. And if we're going to talk about self-sovereign identity, then we should be talking about self-sovereign identity.
Thank you.
Well, never get adoption, Ted.
I'm not arguing that at all. You know, but adoption is a different question, and something that's branded as so many of you people on this call are purists 99% of the time. And now suddenly, no, it's okay. This thing that's branding as self-sovereign within our presentation is going to continue to be called self-sovereign. It's not.
It's not a phone.
Thank you,
Pastor Ted.
Thank you, Ted. So actually, we only have 2 minutes, so I would love to have Drummond actually take the floor and then kind of close the loop for us. Drummond?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that at least Ted, in the book that I was a co-author along with 54 other people on the topic, we do not define self-sovereign identity as something where you are the sole issuer of all the credentials. You can get a credential in a self-sovereign identity wallet from any issuer and share it with any verifier. That is the definition we're using. You're self-sovereign over your wallet and the credentials in your wallet. But if we insisted that the individual was the only root of trust, as Kalia said, I don't think we'd get anywhere. And so that's not the definition any of the rest of us have been using. And, again, I'll refer you to the book and many other places that you might find that. I'm happy to answer any of the questions. Jacques, it's a really amazing story. The NDI Act, by the way, I saw questions about when's it actually going to be published. As I understand it, it is in Parliament, right now. And, I believe the session ends around the end of the month. And I'm pretty sure it will be finalized and therefore publicly published after that.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. So, yeah, great discussions and all that stuff. Gentlemen, I just also want to thank you as well for taking the time to be here and then make these clarifications. I know you're already a kind of a celebrity and well-known figure in the community. I didn't know you're actually also a celebrity in Bhutan with with your books. That I didn't know.
Well, I hope to get to go sometime, and I hope they have the impact that we're, you know, Jacques, all hats off to Jacques and his team and the foresight they had to build this there. So I hope it spreads. And thanks for doing this. CCG and your work has been a lot of what's contributed to, you know, making SSI getting it onto the world stage like this. So let's keep going.
So thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, everyone.
This concludes this week's CCG meeting. We'll publish the meeting minutes in a day or two. And then if you have any questions or further questions, feel free to leverage the email list. All right. Thank you. Have a good one. Bye.